first, can we talk about Atlanta as a place to put together a team?
Sure.
Has that gotten easier? What's been the past 6 years, seven seasons of Archer? Mm-hmm. How has that changed?
Atlanta has changed a lot in the time that we've been making the show. When we first started making it, first of all, the pilot we made with a crew of about 8 people. And so for starters, just in general, we didn't have a gigantic need as far as a staff goes or something like that. And that those 8 people all came from people who I've been making shows in Atlanta with for you know, the prior 10 years. So we were, you know, we didn't have to really look very far. It was just like, hey, you guys are sitting beside me, you want to do this show? And they're like, great. And that was great. And so the majority of that staff, those 10 people, were Atlanta College of Art, which has now got swallowed by SCAD, and a couple of kids actually from, I think, a now defunct department of UGA. So these were all, for the most part, people that came up through Georgia College system, were still here. As the show grew and it got better looking and we had to hit deadlines and stuff, we really started to have to hire in a greater workforce. And it was a kind of a challenge for us at first to find the people to come to work for us, because SCAD Atlanta didn't really exist yet. You had to go and talk to people at SCAD in Savannah to get kids. But even more of a problem than that was to find people who were technically skilled on a higher level, who would say, like, this is not their first job making a cartoon. And those people just really and truly weren't necessarily around here. Turner Studios had some people, but they were working for Turner. And you can't compete about, like, hey, would you like to come work for me instead of Turner? And they're like, no, thank you, we do not. And so it took a long time for us to build up a base. And so I think the first season of Archer, I think the show was made by approximately just slightly under 30 people. And you know, we only made 10 episodes that first season. And then once those people got trained and stuff, and then we started, it started to be easier for us to go out and expand from there. And now we fluctuate greatly depending on how many shows we're making at any given time. But we usually average somewhere between 100 and 150 people. And now we are very closely tied to SCAD. And we just got back from the SCAD Career Fair. We actually have a very good open working relationship about the programs that we're using and stuff, because we have to keep in mind what the people that are coming up through Georgia school system, what programs they're using, how that's gonna impact us and how that's gonna impact our business. And so, in fact, besides Archer, we make a couple other different shows here, and this is just an example of what has happened to our workforce because of how things going. Everybody in animation about 10 years ago used animation software that people are kind of familiar with called Flash. And as we started to see the higher education school systems for art students quit using Flash, we quit using Flash. Because for me, it's not about where I'm getting my next director, because I will go out and search for that person. I have to be concerned about where 70% of my staff is coming from, which is a lot of those kids' first jobs. And so we found people not coming out of school with training and development in Flash, and that signaled to us for the first time, dump it. And we dumped it because the school systems weren't seeing a reason to use it, and they kind of actually saw the death of Flash before we did. And we actually moved on to other software. Now we work with the schools to make sure that we're simpatico in the fact that I want to make sure that I'm using software that kids are wanting to study in school, because I want to know what that 18-year-old kid thinks that their future is going to be, and it kind of drives me.
That's a long answer. As opposed to bringing someone in and training them on the software you have.
What do you think, Amber?
I am very interested in.
You are not.
No, I really am. So let me ask you this question. where is most animation in the country happening? Like, is there way more?
It's not happening in the country. We're one of the very few places that make animation cover. You have a lot of animation studios that are in this country, but they don't actually do it. When you hear that somebody, I'm not speaking about everything, you can't just generalize and, you know, about anything really, but for the most part, when somebody says they have an animation company or they work for an animation company. What they have is a what they do have is a top heavy animation company, which is they'll have directors, they'll have lead storyboard artists, they'll have lead painters. But then that grunt work, that 70% of like, I need 50 different hands, that's done by somebody in Canada, in China, in somewhere that you can either have a gigantic tax break or is what would be considered a third world country. And because so the problem with that is it creates a very large gap in time and talking to people back and forth, and it slows things down, but the cost savings is incredible. So when somebody has an animation company, for the most part, they have the people who make all the decisions, and then they say, you guys over there, go make us our widgets, give us our widgets back, and then we'll futz with the widgets. But what we have is a company that does everything. We do not farm out anything. Everything that we do for Archer and the other shows that we make for FX and Fox is done inside of this building. And the only reason that we can do that, there's only one reason, and that's because of the Georgia Film and Television tax incentive. Without that, we would transform into what everybody else is, which is a top company, which is the high-end people stay, make the decisions, but you ship it out. There are some examples of other people doing work too. You know, I think like Bento Box is a good example. I think they have a hybrid, which is, yes, they do have some of the lower level stuff, but they also have partners with overseas companies as well. But they do also, they kind of ride the middle, which is like, they have a lot of people in LA, they have some people here in Atlanta, and then I believe they have a studio in somewhere like the Philippines or something like that. So they're kind of walking a hybrid, whereas I think other places like Starburns is more of a top-heavy company, where they have their decision makers and then they have their shippers. And Canada makes a lot because of Canada's tax credit is incredibly, incredibly good.
What's the benefit of having everybody in-house other than...
Fast, speed. You can get everything done quickly, and you are... animation, it's a big function of your price gets driven up by how much time it takes you to make it. You can, if somebody told me they only had $100 to make a cartoon, I was like, great, I can do that. And what happens is you just get limited on the amount of time you get to use. It's just basically a knob that adjusts between time and money. And when you have everybody in the same room together, so if you were here walking around, you would see that there's no walls or anything really. Everybody's sitting right next to each other like a giant 1920s sweatshop, and like, you know, there's going to be a fire and everybody's going to be dead in a second. But okay, let's just edit that part out, maybe. but it's like it's a 1920s New York City sewing machine sweatshop. But it's not that way because we're mean. You sit next to the person next to you, and the directors instantly know as they walk around what they're doing, why that's wrong or why it's right or why that's a better idea, and it makes everything go faster. When you have all your directors sitting in place A and your people that are doing it are in place B, there's just downtime that happens when you're having that communication over a lot of time. There's been a lot of tools over the internet that makes it better, that can, you know, really streamline that. Technology is, I think, you know, the book from 15 years ago, The World is Flat. Great book. Talks about, I think they use Higglytown Heroes as their cartoon example, if I'm not mistaken. Higglytown Heroes. But you know how like the show is voiced here, it's edited here, it's drawn here, so that. You can do all that. You can spin all those plates. But it does create inefficiencies that happen because I didn't want it like that, or what language are you speaking? I don't understand that.
How much has the writing changed, and maybe even the design and style, because of what your voice actors do?
The writing is two different questions.
Yeah.
The writing hasn't changed a ton because there's only one writer, and that's my partner Adam, who is just amazing. There's no other television, I dare someone to point me to one other comedy television on TV that's going into its seventh season that's written by one person. It's just simply unheard of. I imagine somebody could do it, but nobody would watch it. It's amazing. So the writing hasn't changed. For many people, I say this changed the most for Pam.
Yeah.
Like, she had like a sentence in the pilot?
I would just went back and read the pilot, and when they introduced, when Pam is introduced, it says Mousy HR Director Pam.
Yeah,
and
Mousy HR Director.
Call her Mousy today, so I think, yeah.
I would. She's very Mousy.
Between like season 2 and 3, I think is when Pam really had her like.
Yeah.
She was pretty whiny when she first had the dolphin puppet.
Yep. And she was like basically described to me as the character that everybody was mean to, and that was her purpose in the show.
It was.
Quite a bit.
I think that's, she's the number one character that has changed the most. Mm-hmm. I think most of the characters are in a constant state of change without ever changing, which is kind of the best way to do something, because you don't ever want to be bored by like that person never grows. You know, I love shows like The Simpsons, but our show is supposed to be like the character is slightly different than it was 2 seasons ago, and that's a good thing for us. But I think that if I had to choose a second character, it would be Krieger, just because he's done more and more and more strange things. You know, he did strange things in the pilot as well.
Is he a clone?
That's between Lucky Yates and Adam Reed. There's definitely stuff that we're doing this season where we're talking about it a little bit here and there. But even though Adam and I have been partners for almost 20 years now, over 20, I think we're on our 21st year.
Drink.
We got each other watches. No, we didn't. He didn't tell me. He didn't tell me which one it is. He said he took Lucky aside, told Lucky. He hasn't told anybody else. And Lucky cannot keep a secret. Evidently, he can keep a conference call time. But he's kept that secret. So those are the only two guys that know. But I do think that his character has gone through the second most amount of change, just from the standpoint of like, look at this weird thing, look at this weird thing. He's now got a wife, you know, albeit see-through one.
Virtual.
Yeah.
And Woodhouse. Woodhouse is a totally different character than...
He is, and there's...
Is he dead?
We are going to address it. I don't want to address it here today. I'm sorry. But we are going to address it soon. We have thoughts on it and how we're going to do it, but we haven't addressed it publicly yet. We'll get there.
So, I mean, another one of the big changes that a lot of people have talked about is the removal of the name ISIS, which is, that's one way of me getting into the question of the purpose of the Archer Vice season, which seemed to have been sort of a reset button in some ways. What was the benefits of that season?
I think that season just let in like a huge breath of fresh air, which is, I'm not saying that the show, you don't want to just sit there and spin your wheels all the time. I just mentioned a second ago, like a constant state of change without ever changing. And we felt that we needed to shake everybody up, you know, just kind of change everything. The dynamics kind of still stayed the same, but they slightly shifted to the right. And it made for new, interesting dynamics and equations. Just alone, Pam's journey in that season was fantastic. Just to, you know, she's been so identified as this big brassy lady. And what does that mean when Pam is a coked up size 2? Mm-hmm. And I think that's interesting.
Yeah, and a lot of people like online and Twitter and stuff, like people were like, what is happening? Like some people were really happy about season 5 and some people were really upset. And the thing that I kept telling people was like, you can't, if you're making comedy and you're not taking chances and pissing people off, then you're not making good art ever. So, like, you know, we had to take that chance, I feel like.
Yeah.
And it changed how it made, I think it made it possible for anything to happen in this world anytime.
Right.
So the audience was a little bit like, oh, we can't be just complacent. We don't know what's going to happen in this world.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I don't want you to know if somebody's going to live or die. And I want you to know what they're going to say. It's something we found about, like, initially when season 5 was on air. Where there were some negative comments because we were changing something. But we've found that once those seasons get to Netflix, the entire dynamic of the conversation has changed. And people are like, this season's amazing.
Okay.
And like at first we were hearing from like the early adopters and the people who are so invested in this universe. And you don't want, you know, like I have this saying that is, I invented a pill that gives worms to ex-girlfriends, which is a line from Brain Candy. And what that means is like there's this great thing in Brain Candy where like, could you invent a pill that say gives worms to ex-boyfriends instead of ex-girlfriends? And the guy's like, this is a pill that gives worms to ex-girlfriends. It's just like you don't get it. Because people just hate it when you change their stuff. They hate it. And but when you do, it can turn out so much better. And now if you go back and look at the conversation today about what people think of season five, after it got out as a whole on Netflix and people had the chance to digest it, because, you know, our, the way that we watch television has changed so greatly.
You mean like with binge watching?
Yeah. And it makes for a much different experience. And what we're doing this season is something similar to that, which is we're changing in everything again, slightly, you know? It's still, Pam's still doing things that are like, oh my God,
yeah,
what's wrong with you?
Still as terrible to each other as they've ever been.
But we slightly shifted their dynamics. And one of my favorite things that we've done is they're going to LA and they're going to be private investigators. And it really changes Archer and Cyril's relationship the most, because Cyril, it's the biggest detective agency. There's a rule, it's a real thing about you have to have so many hours of in the field PI work to be a licensed private investigator in LA, or you can have a law degree. Cyril is the only one with a law degree, so he's the only one that is legally allowed to open a private investigation firm. So Archer works for Cyril. Now it's still Archer, it's still Cyril, it's still Pam farting off doing Pam things, but the dynamic again slightly shifted to the right, and it makes for these conversations to be all brand new again.
Can you look at Archer and say, okay, now we know this is the formula for an animated show that's actually going to last into its seventh and eighth season, or is it just kind of kismet?
I don't think you ever know. You know, you don't know. As much as I like to think that I do know, this is Adam and I's third show that we've done. The other two were mildly successful. The first show we did was called C-Lab 2021. The second one was Frisky Dingo. Mm-hmm. Pamber, I now call her Pamber sometimes. Pamber was with, Pamber and Lucky were both with us in Frisky Dingo. They were mildly successful, but they weren't anything like this, you know? They weren't like house payment good. But you never know. And we've had other pilots and we've had other things. It is difficult, because if anybody tells you, like, here's the formula how to make something, I'll just sit there and tell that person they're wrong, because nobody wants the formula. You have to be something slightly different, you know? And then everybody's like, oh, do it like that. And then you get 30 shows of like, oh, that's a talking dog with a family. I think we have that show, and we don't need your, you know, knockoff of it. So there, I don't think there really is a formula. There's not. And if there was, people would be doing it.